Welcome to the Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Hey, welcome to the 61st episode of the Golf Podcast. Hey, Mike, today we've got a great treat. We've got Marty Griffin of the Golf Strategy School Podcast on the show. I'm looking forward to having him on.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We had a great conversation with him back on his show, and we shared a lot of great ideas with him, and looking forward to his stories today.
Yeah, and his show will be out soon. When it does hit, we'll make sure to post it on Golficity so all of you can listen to that as well. But just a quick background on Marty. He actually started golfing at age 12 after having his second open heart surgery. It's amazing. Just his whole story is quite amazing. But he played for a while, very similar background to like what I talked about playing in high school, and he went on to play in college. But he's had practically played in almost every type of tournament and pro-am and anything you can imagine. He even played in some Remax world-long drive qualifiers. So he's got quite a bit of experience. But one thing that, and this really sparked my interest, this is something I really wanted to get him on the show to talk about. And what I really am enamored with and what I really like is that Marty's not afraid to talk about this, because a lot of golfers would kind of just hide this one or under the rug. But he's a great golfer. His career low competition round was a 66. That's 6 under. His career high, 122, 50 wow. over par. And you know what? What I love about this is we've all had those days, but Marty, you know, he's proud of what he learned from that. And that's what we want to bring him on the show and talk about, because sure, it feels great when you shoot those career bests, but it's those career worsts that you can kind of learn the most from. So I'm excited to talk to him about it. I know Mikey's going to have a lot of stuff that you and I can relate to, a lot of stuff that the audience can relate to. So without any further delay, let's go ahead and bring him in on the show. Okay, we have Marty Griffin of the Golf Strategy School Podcast on the line. Marty, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate you having me.
Hey, it's great to have you. You know, before we brought you on, we started talking a little bit about your history and how you had you'd started playing when you were 12 after having a second open heart surgery. It's quite an amazing story. You want to elaborate a little bit more about how you got into golf?
Yeah, sure. You know, like you mentioned, I started playing at age 12, which seems to be a popular age to kind of come into golf as a youngster anyway. But for me, it was because I had that second open heart surgery. And prior to that, I played a lot of baseball and I was a wrestler. And the doctors told me no more of either of those. And my dad had just started to pick up the game after about a 20-year absence. I happened to follow him to the driving range, and it just kind of stuck from that point. We were kind of learning at the same rate, progressing at the same rate. So it was a lot of friendly competition between us, but it also helped tie that love of the game in by learning at the same time and going through all the same obstacles and hurdles.
That's excellent. So it's great that you found, you know, a sport that you could kind of put your energy into after going through that.
Oh, God, yeah, I needed it, too.
I can imagine. So you've been playing consistently since then?
Yeah. I turned 32 this year, so I'm just starting my 20th year of playing golf. And I say that it is actually 20 years now, because our local golf show came through town and I actually got to hit a little bit this year. So the club has been swung. It counts. It's in the books.
Yeah, well, you're beating us, because we still haven't been out there. There's still snow everywhere, and it's too depressing to talk about. So we won't even go into that, because we've mentioned
right
on
there with
shows.
You in yeah. Wisconsin.
absolutely. So now you've played all different types of events, and we noted a little bit going into it. Even, you know, some of the Remax World Long Drive qualifiers. You played in a couple of pro-ams and things like that. Yep. So tell us a little bit about your experience and how you got involved in some of those things.
Well, really, it all started kind of from that very first day that I followed my dad to the driving range. He taught me pretty much everything he could over that first summer. And he was smart enough to know that everything that I had to learn beyond that had to come from someone else. So he got me into lessons right away. From that point, I just kind of worked my way up the lesson chain in terms of working with pros that dealt with more and more experienced players. Mm-hmm. And once, by the time I got to high school, I was working with a gentleman by the name of Bill Cocott, who is the 2002 State Teacher of the Year for the Wisconsin PGA section. And he was like the first guy to bring on video and stuff like that. So it really helped me as a player. And we stayed connected for a long time. And so he's the one that invited me to a couple of pro-ams. I think my favorite one was at the Bull at Pinehurst Farms up in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. It's not too far away from like Whistling Straits. And it's a Nicholas design. And holy smokes, was that course just amazing. But really, it's just staying connected with the game is kind of what brought me those different opportunities.
That's great. I know there's got to be a lot of people listening who are following a similar progression or they have children who are. What kind of tips do you have for when you were going through and working with different coaches? Do you find there's different people you clicked with, some that maybe you didn't, or how did that fit in?
Oh, absolutely. You have to shop around. If you come across a coach that, whether they think too highly of themselves or you just don't gel well together, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I mean, just be upfront with the coach. I mean, as a kid who's trying to progress through the amateur ranks like that, obviously it's hard for the kid to just straight away bring that up to their coach. Mm-hmm. You know, and I certainly didn't have the gumption as a 14-year-old to say, I think I'm ready for a new coach.
Right.
You know, I had to talk to my parents about it and be like, you know, I think I'm kind of at my max with this particular coach. I think it's time to move on. And so we did that time after time. A couple of times, you know, I went through like a little 3-lesson session with a gentleman by the name of Jim Schumann. He was the University of Wisconsin men's golf coach for a while. He's a Rick Smith disciple. He's played in U.S. Opens. I mean, the guy really knows his stuff. And I picked up some great tips from him and some strategies that I still use today, like my alignment strategy I get from him. Mm-hmm. But in terms of actual lessons and how he handled me as a player, we just didn't click. I mean, he was one of the highest rated coaches in the state and it just didn't work. So, I mean, my biggest advice for whether it be a student or a parent who's trying to shepherd their child through the process mm-hmm. is just make sure you're 100% comfortable with your coach, just because it's a service you're paying for. And if I'm shelling out money, I'm going to make sure I get, every last possible ounce out of my dollars.
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head there, because just because a coach has a certain amount of credentials or just because they worked maybe with one of your buddies or somebody else who's taking a lesson from him, doesn't mean it's going to work with you. You really have to have that comfort level, because, you know, we talk about all the time, just swing your own swing. And when a coach has a certain mindset of how they want to do it, it just might not jive with you. It doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean it's wrong. It might work for somebody, not work for another, like you said. But that's really good advice, to be able to bounce around and work with a couple different people until you get that right feel. And then even another thing that you mentioned there is that once you kind of feel like you've hit your limit and learned kind of everything you can, mix it mm-hmm. up and try somebody new. I like that point for sure.
Because there's nothing saying you can't go back to that prior coach that you felt comfortable with. If you're shopping around and you just can't find a good fit, well, go back to that last coach. I guarantee they're going to be happy to have you back.
I couldn't agree more. And then you have that something else that you can reference and compare it against. You
know? Yeah,
if
exactly.
If you're working with one coach the whole time, you're not quite sure. You don't know about some of the other takes and some of the other looks at the game that you might have gotten if you have a different perspective by working with a couple different people. So that's great. That's definitely a great tip. So one thing I really want to talk about, and one thing we started talking about before we brought you on the show, and honestly, one thing that I'm quite enamored with the fact that you're so open with is we talked about the career high, that 122 you shot. And just for perspective, you know, so people understand that, you know, your ability, your career low round was a 66. It was a 6 under. So we're talking about quite a disparity here. And what I really like about this is that a lot of people, especially if they're giving out golf advice, would take something like that and brush it under the rug because they think that kills my credibility, you know. But on the other side of that coin is something like Mike and I talk about all the time. We're not pros. You know, we go through these struggles and we take those instances and learn from them. So I know you had mentioned, we were talking a little bit before the show started, but you had mentioned that there was a lot that you learned from that. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Oh, for sure. You know, I'll just kind of add one layer onto that twist the knife a little further. Those career high and career lows are actually tournament play. Oof. So, wow. You know, it just add all that extra insult to the injury.
Ouch.
But yeah, I mean, really for me, that 122 that I shot, which I think I was probably like a 3 handicap at the time. The way that I kind of equate that experience to everybody else is, you know, everybody's got one hole, at least one hole that just absolutely has their number. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, you just have a mental block on that hole. For me growing up, it was the second hole on the east course of my home course, Yahara Hills. For whatever reason, I would be happy getting away with a bogey on that. And I could shoot par for the rest of the day, but I was more than happy to take bogey on that hole. But with this specific course, it was it's Lake Arrowhead is in Wisconsin, and it's a really nice place. They've got a pines course and a lakes course. This is the lakes course that I was playing, and it wasn't a big tournament or anything like that. It was guys that I'd played with before. There should have been absolutely no pressure for me to go here and play, and I had played the course before. And really, the big takeaway for me is how I learned to just perpetually look at the positive side, the heads up side of the coin. Mm-hmm. Because when you put up a number like that, let's face it, you're, especially as a 4 handicap, 3-4 handicap, there's nowhere you're going to be except for the absolute bottom of the leaderboard.
Right.
You know, the day is over. There's nothing you can change about it. Let's analyze it and figure out what we can take from that. And for me, it was really, I learned the power of positive thought. And I know it sounds cheesy and you hear mental coach gurus talk about it all the time, but really I had a mental block at this course for years. I started out playing a tournament there in high school. It may have been a junior tour event that I was playing there. And I didn't do poorly, but I shot like 82. You know, I was about 10 over. And at the time, I think I was about a 10 handicap. So I wanted to do better, but I wasn't upset. And it seemed like every time I went there and I played there, the only thing that I could remember was, oh, this course had really fast greens. And man, those fairways are skinny. And there's a lot of water, and I would just start layering negative thought upon negative thought on top of the location. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't have anything to do with the course. I mean, it was all between my ears, but every time I'd go back there, the score would creep up 4 or 5 more strokes. And it got to the point where even before that 122, I put up 2 rounds prior to that in this annual tournament that were in the hundreds.
So it was solidly in your head.
Oh, I might as well have been standing at the bottom of Everest.
Mm-hmm.
it was bad. But after that 122, the really sad part about that 122 is I ended it with a birdie. And that was just enough of a positive takeaway for me to have a different perspective when I came back to the course the next year. And that 122 turned into, I want to say I shot like 81 or 82 the next year, because I was finally able to get over that hump with just purely based on the fact that I had birdied that last hole. It was a positive image in my head. Mm-hmm. I went through thinking, okay, I made birdie the last time I was here. The last thing I did here was beat one specific hole.
Mm-hmm.
And stepping up to the next tee, that's all I could really focus on, is the fact that, like, okay, 122 is horrible, but the last 3 shots were great.
Right.
And it was that mindset that I just tried to keep a hole at a time. You know, don't worry about the 4 putts that I had. Don't worry about the every one once in a while when I snap out of bounds or something like that. And just to really stay in the moment, focus on the things that I can control, and just keep my head up, really.
Exactly. And what you said there about, you know, positive attitude sounding kind of cheesy or whatever it may be. Sure, that may be true, but I can guarantee once you apply it and it clicks for you, cheesy or not, you're going to be, you know, singing it from the rooftop, so to speak, because
exactly.
You realize how much it changed. I mean, let's think about this for a second. In your time span of playing that, the 122 versus the 81 or whatever, I can pretty much guarantee that very little of your swing mechanics changed. very little bit of your plan of attack for the course changed.
For sure.
Largely what you're saying is just the mindset that changed, and just that, again, that challenge in your mind where you feel like you're either facing an uphill battle versus saying, I can do this. So if, I mean, we talk about all the time, and people look on YouTube and everywhere else looking for, here's how to gain 10 more yards and shave these strokes. Well, yep. How about that? You got a 40 stroke swing there just by changing your mindset and attacking it from a place of a little bit more positive attitude, right?
Yeah. And honestly, it's something that I try to apply really across the board a lot more than just golf. They're kind of fundamental principles of neuro-linguistic programming. You'll hear people like Tony Robbins talk about NLP. And I know just bringing the name Tony Robbins in can kind of add to the cheese factor. But, you know, it's one of those things, like you said, once you've actually experienced it, holy smokes, has your perspective changed?
Absolutely. And then when you get that feeling, it's just like you want to keep that going and you keep focusing and you find something at the end of each round. It's just like your birdie that you had there. We're just saying, that's what I want to dwell on. Rather than having that nightmare or just replaying all the bad shots, just being able to create that mental image. We've talked about it a lot on our own show. Just ideas of what you don't always realize. You're not always cognizant of what your mind is telling your body to do. Something as simple as saying, you know, don't hit it in the lake, your body, the last, you know, thought you have before your swing thought is that
is lake.
Yep. Exactly. So in your case, you're thinking those narrow fairways, small greens, and you're thinking, you know, don't miss the fairway, don't miss the green, or whatever it may be. And what's happening? You're doing it. You're missing the fairways. You're missing the greens rather than really going in there and attacking it and going after your target. You don't, in other words, what I'm trying to say is you don't always realize the targets you're setting for yourself.
Right. And the problem is it's a really, really slippery slope. You know, once you focus on the wrong thing and you have that don't hit it in the lake mentality, or I've got to get it over the bunkers kind of a thought. As soon as that happens, then you start getting reckless and riskier trying to make up for it. I mean, that's what happened to me. I think I lost at least 5 golf balls that day. You know, and, you know, walking around a course that it didn't have a ton of water is a bunch of pine trees that were cut up at least like 40, 50 feet. So you could see absolutely everything on the ground, but it didn't matter. I mean, if there was any trouble, I didn't even, as long as it came across my eyes, I was going to find a way to get there because I had already predetermined the outcome really by having all these kind of negative connotations in the back of my head.
Right. It's that snowball, you know, effect rolling downhill, so to speak, where it's just kind of getting worse and worse. And then you also don't always realize the pressure you're putting on yourself because, like you said, when you're playing catch up, now you're taking yourself even further out of your game. You're trying to play even further above your level, where instead of saying, you know, I just want to get through my round and make pars where I can and birdies.
Yeah, survive.
Now, right. Now the mindset is I have to start making birdies and you start taking these undue chances. And then what happens? You know, you lose control of the round, you lose control of your whole mental mindset towards your strategy. And usually if you had one going in, it went out the window.
Oh yeah. And I'm just to kind of give your listeners a bit of perspective. I'm a guy that loves pressure. You know, you put a water hazard that's 250 yards with a carry. I'm the first guy to step up to the tee and try and bust it over that. You know, I'm from Wisconsin, so I only get to play when it's not snowing. And in the winter, I'm a bowler. And for my bowling team, I'm always the anchor bowler because I like the pressure because I perform better under pressure. Mm-hmm. And that just made it so much worse. Just that one single instance where I'm getting myself into trouble where I'm expecting myself to pull out the miracle shot because it's happened so many times before. And it's good to have that thought that you have the ability. But the problem was there was still such a roadblock mentally with me in the course that I was looking at it in a past tense perspective rather than a current and future tense perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm at this course and I'm struggling. And yeah, I remember all those good old days when, you know, I'm buried in a bunker and I'm holing out on my home course rather than, well, that was last week. Right. What's the difference?
Right.
You know?
And there's a huge difference between when the pressure's there and you're attacking something with confidence.
Oh,
like
yeah.
You're saying, like, sure, I can carry that. No problem. And just feeling it. And that's where you say you're in that kind of groove versus the pressure of attacking it from a detrimental standpoint where you're saying, I have to carry that because I have to make up my strokes. You know, there's a completely different mindset. So the pressure can be there and it's just how you harness it. Whether you attack that pressure with confidence or you attack it from a standpoint of saying, I'm always just kind of staying one step ahead of it without letting it overtake me, so to speak.
Yeah. And I think it's a good thing to at least experience playing golf under pressure at some point, because it tells you a lot about yourself. And really, if you're playing golf at some point, you're going to want to be under pressure because you want to be setting personal bests. Mm-hmm. And you have to know how to deal with those situations when they come up. What I had to do specifically after this 122, I don't take lessons from the head pro at my home course, but I've played there for so long. He's like a second father to me, and I was just venting to him, and he didn't charge me anything. He said, go take a cart, go out on the course, play the forward tees, and then tell me how it went. And he knew that I just needed to shake the cobwebs loose of that,
right,
that nightmare round behind me and go out there and put myself in birdie scenario after birdie scenario to really kind of hit the reset button in terms of my mental status, yeah, whichever.
Well, and coming from somebody who has that experience with the pressure, we talk a lot about on the show about the importance of simulating pressure in your practice. We talk about the importance of creating games on the range and things like that, because that's where we find that a lot of people have trouble with that transition where they play well in practice, but then when they get out on the course, they're struggling because that's where they're feeling the pressure. So with that being said, and with someone with as much tournament experience as you have, is that something you would suggest, even for someone, if their aspiration is not to really play in tournament play, would you still suggest that they try playing in a local tournament at some point just to get that feeling for that pressure?
Absolutely. I think it's a great experience that it kind of changes your perspective on golf from that point forward. And don't worry about your score, your outcome, or anything like that. The one thing I would probably suggest before you play in a tournament is, if you can get a USGA handicap, yeah, established, mm-hmm, then most tournaments are going to have different flights. So you're playing against people with similar capabilities. That way, you know, if this is your first year playing golf, you don't get stuck with the local version of Tiger Woods, who's just going to light the course on fire and you just feel horrible kicking the ball along. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have that handicap established, most tournaments do have flighted divisions and you'll be playing with similar skilled competitors. And really, it teaches you a lot about yourself. And I think it opens up a whole new aspect to the game for a lot of people. I played, you know, like you mentioned, I've played a lot of tournament golf. Even now, I only usually get to play like once a week because I run a league, mm-hmm, and I've got two little girls at home. Most of my other time is spent either at home or helping my oldest daughter start to play golf. But there's still at least five tournaments annually that I go out and play, mm-hmm, just because it's a different type of golf for me. And I think once people experience that, it'll enhance the overall experience within the game. And it's something that I absolutely recommend.
Yeah. And I think what you said is so right in that, you know, in my experience too, playing in tournament play, is that you really can't describe it until you go out there and try it. It's just right, so much different than playing around, you know, on the weekend with your buddies. And I'm not saying it in a bad way. It's in a good way that there's a lot of differences, a lot that you can learn. And I find that generally speaking, sure, are you going to every once in a while run into a couple guys who are kind of know-it-alls and a little bit intimidating? Yes, that's going to happen. But in my experience, and maybe you have a similar one, I found that the community surrounding those local tournaments is great. I found that a lot of the people you paired with, they're very helpful. You know, you don't necessarily need to go out there and know the USGA rule book from front to back. You can ask questions. Guys are helpful with that, or they'll give you like a pointer here and there, because especially if you're playing in some of those flights where you're with the higher handicappers, like you said, they know they're not winning anything that day. So I found that's a lot of advice. And also even just from watching and learning. It's a great way to kind of absorb things. Just like with, it's a tip I've heard with just about anything. If you want to get better at something, so surround yourself with people who are better than yourself, and you'll kind of absorb it. So that's another reason why I think it's great to get out there and play.
Jim Rohn all the way.
Yeah.
If you surround yourself with, you are the average of the five people you surround yourself with. So, and I 1,000% agree with that.
So in golf, biggest, we'll make it the three people you surround yourself.
There we go. Yeah, exactly. with my tournament experience, I always liked playing with people who are better than me because it spurs me on to keep up.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not always a conscious thing, because especially if you're early on in your tournament playing experience, you're just really going to be treading water, trying to get to that 18th hole, because it's a completely different feeling, different type of golf. And, you know, if you're lucky enough to get paired up with people who are a little bit better than you, it will spur your play. I know I play with my father-in-law most of the time, and he has never broken 100. And the very first time I played with him, I shot 37, which was two over at the course we were playing. We just played nine, and he shot 47. And it was, to this day, or I think he may have broken that as a personal best this year, but it was his best score for about 7-8 years. And he's like, I didn't even realize it. I was just trying to keep up. And it's very similar with tournament golf. That's a lot of the time where you're going to find someone who's at least similarly skilled, if not a little bit better than you. And it'll give you something to kind of measure yourself against. Not that you should ever measure yourself against a drive or anything like that, but anytime it's the same reason why they put a rabbit on the Greyhound track. You know, you need something to chase.
Yeah.
And if you have something to chase, you're going to do better just instinctually.
Hey, Marty, Mike here. I just have a quick question for you. I think you can maybe help us out, you know, help me out at least, because this is something I've been struggling with. You talked a lot about you actually mentioned the word confident a bunch of times. You're talking about your blow up round. First of all, hats off to you. I thought that was a Sunday round and not tournament play. I was going to say,
no. I was money on the table.
Yeah, I was going to say to Frank, I don't know who cards a 122. I don't know about you, but I usually have a blank scorecard after the 12th hole if I'm having a day like that. So, but anyway, I don't want to digress. I want to know, how do you overcome lack of confidence with a particular club in your bag? I do not have any confidence in my driver. I always hit the hybrid off the tee. I have, you know, 40 more yards I'm leaving on the table. I'm sure a lot of people struggle with this. I'm sure you've struggled with this at some point over your career. Right. What do you do to overcome that?
What I try to do is, regardless of whether it's a club, if it's a hole, if it's a course, whatever is that obstacle in front of you, just try and find at least one good thing you've done with it. You know, you say that your driver's kind of always been a pain in the butt. Well, I'm sure there's been at least a couple good ones that have come off the club.
Sure.
You know, focus on that. Anytime I have a blow up hole, what I do as I'm walking to the next tee is I try and think of three things that I did well on that previous hole. You know, a great example is I was playing in the Madison City tournament, which is a 2-day event that went between my home course and another municipal course that I'm very familiar with. But I had come up against my nemesis hole. It was the 16th hole. Doesn't matter what I do. I bogey, double, triple. I've put snowmen on the card. It doesn't matter. And this was my first time playing in the scratch flight, so I didn't get to use my handicap. There was no crutches. One of the guys I was playing with was a couple under par. I was even. I'm like, okay, I've hit good drives on this hole. Let's just start with that. And I hit a good drive. I'm like, okay, now I just need to get a good approach shot on this hole. I know that I've in the past, I've actually hit this ball to tap in distance. And so I didn't hit a great shot, but it was on the green. And at that point, I was like, okay, mission accomplished. Problem was, I kind of took my foot off the gas pedal and I said, okay, I'm a good putter in general. I'm just going to go up and just do my normal thing. And as I'm standing over the ball, I just hear, you know, just leg it close. Just get it anywhere near the hole. Just make it a tap in. That's not my golf. I'm a in the middle, off the back of the cup kind of guy. You know, try and make just about every putt. I ended up four putting. Oh. So I got to write a double on the card. I was still hungover from that performance. The next hole is a par three along a major road. I snap my 9-iron onto the road, and I can just hear it clicking down the road. And I've got my head in my hands, yep. And I'm just thinking every four-letter word in the book, and I hear it hit a car. And it bounced back inbounds in play. I got up and down and made par. And it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you know, that car hitting it back on the course was a sign. You know, I have an opportunity. Keep my head up. I'm only two over. This is not a bad number. And I get to go play my home course tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, I can still get this thing done. And the next hole, I hit a bad shot. But again, keeping that positive mental mindset, I ended up actually making birdie with a really nasty drive. And I went into the final round, I want to say two or three strokes behind, and I won the tournament by 9 the next day.
Wow.
I mean, I was kind of on fire. I shot 68 that day, but I could tell the other guy was in my exact same shoes. He was trying to be conservative, and I'd played with him a couple times, and he's a pin hunter. And he got away from that, and he changed his game, and everything kind of washed away underneath him.
Absolutely. Every time you get away from your game, that's what's going to happen. And one thing that I like, and a little bit of thing that I can add to that, is as far as with this positive thinking, it can be challenging, but I can kind of just see it in the way you're just talking about these different holes. It's become very natural to you to switch to that positive thinking. And that can be tough. Switching your mindset, especially the beginning, if you're used to thinking from that negative, detrimental standpoint, it can be very difficult. But I think as you get it more and more, you can start to find those things. Because even when you're saying that and saying that one tip was to look back and find at least one or good thing, or you said three good things that you did from a previous hole.
Yep.
Some guys may think, I shot a 10 on the last hole. What could possibly be good? I didn't do anything right. But there always is something. Even if you said, well, you know what? If nothing else, before I got off the tee, I had a good plan of attack for that.
That's exactly where I was going to go. Exactly. Even if every single ball flew sideways,
right?
You can still find things that went correctly. You know, whether it's your pre-shot routine, you know, did you stick to your pre-shot routine throughout that? I wish I could remember the name of the book. There's a book about the mental side of the game, and the gentleman talks about what he calls the pre-shot pyramid. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of broken it down, to, you have to analyze first, obviously, you know, wind, distance, all the standard stuff that everybody's used to doing. You have to visualize where you want to go. And that's really the positive thought. You know, if there's a lake on your right, you don't care because that's not your destination.
Right.
You know, you're looking down the middle of the fairway. And then once you actually step up to the ball, you are in execute mode. Your decision has been made. Even if it's the wrong decision, if you make it confidently, you are going to have a better outcome than if you're waffling with the correct club in your hand throughout that swing. It's a great theory that's put forth by, there are two teachers on the Golf Digest top 50 list out in Arizona, and they founded what's called Vision 54, and they have a theory called Think Box, Play Box. Your think box is the time you're standing behind the ball. That's when you're looking, taking in all that analysis. Mm-hmm. And then when you address the ball, that's the play box. Every decision is made. Everything has already been decided. There's no changing it. You've already crossed the point of no return.
Right.
And you're going to execute.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing that especially amateur golfers can really benefit from, is thinking of those two sides of the game as their own sort of games and own areas where you can improve, because a lot of guys just think the game is 100% execute and not all the other stuff. So that's where they don't see where what positive came out of this, because all my execution was bad. But it's that prep stuff, that analysis that went in and be like, well, my analysis was good. My plan was good. I'm going to approach the next tee and just go and build on that. You know, I'll have my analysis be good again, and then maybe my execution will follow. So a lot of great stuff there. And truthfully, I could I could talk about this stuff all night because I love it. And because we're not playing right now, it's all I can do is talk
about
it.
Exactly. It scratches the itch.
Exactly. So and that's exactly what it is an itch. I can't wait to get out there. But, you know, before we wrap things up, why don't you take a minute, tell us a little bit more about your podcast. I know it's brand new. You just came out about a month and a half, 2 months ago?
Yeah, January.
Yep. But I've been following along as you've been going. A lot of great interviews that you have there. So tell our listeners a little bit about the show and where they can find you.
Yeah, so my podcast is called Golf Strategy School, and it can be found at golfstrategyschool.com. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get as much good content out there as possible in terms of golf by interviewing different PGA instructors from all around the country and actually around the world now. I've got a couple of top 100 instructors on the list. I know Tom Stickney was gracious enough to agree to the interview before I even had a website up.
Wow.
But I mean, I just know the importance that instruction played in my game. Mm-hmm. And I know what golf has meant to me and to my family. And really, I think anyone who's even had a smidgen of interest in it can fall in love with it. And for me, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to give you this great information from these different instructors. I go through a pretty structured interview where I ask them, and I by all means, I take user questions. So if anybody out there listening has a question that they would like to ask a pro, by all means, shoot me an email. My email is marty@golfstrategyschool.com, and I'll do my best to work that into future interviews. But we talk about like what their favorite practice drills are. If they only had a day to prepare for a tournament, what are they going to spend that 24-hour time period doing? Mm-hmm. We get book recommendations, things like that. And really, we're trying to give you all the tools that you need to really improve your golf game. And hopefully you'll get as much enjoyment out of it that I do, regardless of whether or not it's a 66 or a 122.
And I think one of the beauties there is that you are gaining so many different perspectives. Because like we started talking about right at the beginning of the show, is that every instructor is going to have a little bit of a different take. And by hearing so many different ones, you can kind of formulate your own strategy towards the game, and you can kind of see where you click. So I think that's great that week to week you're bringing, you know, new instructors on every week. That's an excellent thing. So what I'll do is I'll link to your show and everything in our podcast notes. You can go to that by getting to golfissy.com/episode61. And then we'll be following along. I'm looking forward to hearing some of those interviews you have coming up.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity here, Frank and Mike. And for all you listeners out there, I actually got these guys to come on my show and go through my rigorous interview process. So if you want to hear some of their horror stories, you can stop on by when their episode airs.
Nothing beats trading golf horror stories, that's for sure.
Yep.
All right. Well, I appreciate it again. And thanks for coming on the show.
No problem. Thank you much, guys.
All right, so I want to thank Marty again for coming on the show. That was great. I always love just trading stories, so to speak, and his experience is so relatable, and that's why, Mike, that's why I really wanted to have him on the show, because I know there's so many listeners out there who are somewhere in that same time span, like somewhere within his career path, so to speak. They're in that same experience level, and there's something that they can gain from that, even if it's just not being too discouraged when you do have around like he had. I mean, it's just great to hear. Do you agree?
Yeah, totally agree. In fact, I loved his conversation about shopping around for coaches and finding the best coach. You know, Frank, with your 77 you carded last year, I'm thinking about sending you a check to be my coach if you'd like. So, yeah, you know, I got to get down to that.
Yeah, there's a big difference between doing and teaching, they say, right? So,
right, exactly.
I don't know which one of those I fit into yet. But anyway, so again, I want to thank Marty for coming on the show. Thank you for listening. As I said, you can get everything we talked about, all the links to Marty's show and any other notes from this week's show by going to golfissy.com/episode61. We'll have everything there in the show notes. As always, thank you for listening. If you enjoy what you hear here, just please take a minute and just leave us an iTunes review on iTunes. We really appreciate that. It's the best way for us to grow the show. Mike and I, over the last couple of weeks, have gotten a lot of great emails, people just kind of warming up for the season and talking about the things that they're going to be working on. So we love getting those as well. So if you want to get in touch with us, you can always email us at podcast@golfissy.com. So we'll be back again next week. And in the interim, hit them straight, enjoy it, and we'll talk to you soon.